Hello and welcome back to Spinal Cast. I'm your host, David Stevens, and joining us today are Linda and Steve Carter. Linda is a retired director of global creative marketing for Reebok and has taken up large-scale abstract painting, while Steve is a retired colonel of the U.S. Army with a combined 23 years of active duty and reserve service and currently serves it as an Army Reserve ambassador. And Steve currently serves also as the senior business strategist for Generational Consulting Group. Linda, Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, David. Look forward to it. Thanks for including us.
Absolutely. So for today's episode, I think what we'd really like to do is discuss, the importance of friends and family when someone experiences an injury or has a spinal cord injury, and just, you know, a little bit more about the two of you and your experience living through it. And if that sounds all right to you, we'll just jump into some questions.
Okay.
Sounds great.
Okay, perfect.
Well, am I allowed to hit my brother or keep him in line? Since I'm
you know what, Linda, you can do whatever you'd like.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, Steve, let's start with you. So I know the two of you are siblings, obviously. But could you give us a little background as to, you know, where you grew up and kind of what it was like as kids growing up?
Yeah. So Linda and I are the only two siblings in our family with our parents, John and Barbara, who are both now gone. But so we grew up, started in Ohio, then went down to Atlanta, New Jersey, then back to Ohio. So my dad worked for Division General Motors. We moved around with him.
Okay.
And so we had a little journey of, but most of our time, I would say, was Ohio.
In Massachusetts, summer.
In the summer, we'd come to Massachusetts. Both my parents are from the Boston area.
Okay.
And so we would come back here in the summer and visit. My mom has a little cottage on a lake. So we would come back here and enjoy some time. It's interesting here that we share that my sister is 2 years older than I am biologically.
Okay.
However, she's like the Benjamin Button because she's getting younger every year. And every time we have a birthday, she's either 39 or 29.
29.
And so I was her younger brother. Now I'm older brother. I don't know how that.
Ah.
Well, mentally, he's older than me. And responsibility wise, he's a responsible one. I'm kind of like the creative one.
Okay.
Well, yeah, you're 29. Why not?
Oh, that's right.
You got all the time in the world to be serious and, you know, get on top of everything.
Anyway, so I played football and basketball in high school, went off to West Point to go to college and played football and basketball there, and then went into the Corps of Engineers, as you said, served 23 years in the military. When I left the active Army, went into the civilian world, mostly logistics and supply chain management, Walmart, Target, Honeywell, Reebok, a bunch of companies.
Yeah.
And so I had a good career, leadership positions, but ended up now in this consulting role where I work with small to medium businesses on strategic consulting.
Very cool. And what about you, Linda? If you want to give us a little background on you, and maybe even if you want to touch on the accident and that as well, that would probably be good.
So yes, we moved around quite a bit. And let's see, there's so many things that tie into, I'll just jump into it. I was giving a presentation in New York for a brand new shoe for Reebok called The Pump. So I had to do one on Friday and one on Monday. And in between, it was snowing terribly. So I went up to see my roommate in college.
Yeah.
She's in Connecticut. And she said, you can go snow tubing with us in the back of a little kid's hill school, or you can go home and start drinking. Well, you know, I'm going to be healthy. So we went to the little hill and went in the tube. But I am afraid of my head down. Mm. I did triathlons in a Nantucket bike. So you can see why I never won, because I'm kind of dueling along. And skiing, I did not like, because I took my skis off and walked down, because I'm always afraid of my head. So when the tube came, I said, I'm going to sit in the tube versus laying on the tube.
Right.
I'm going to be. Well, I also saw this little mogul and I thought, well, I haven't done anything exciting for a long time. I'm going to go up that mogul. Well, that mogul set me up about three stories and came down on my tailbone and smashed. That was kind of it. So everyone kind of saw it, knew it was a problem. And I was in Danbury Hospital for a long time. And
where is that located?
Connecticut. It's like, okay, you know, an hour's north of New York City.
Okay.
Then I transferred to the West Roxbury, Massachusetts VA. So at that point, there weren't a lot of guys from the service coming in with injuries. So they were accepting patients like with insurance.
Yeah.
This was 1994. So there was no real active war going on. So the VA had.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. But the guys I was around, most of them were in the service in some way. So that was, you know, interesting. you never think, oh my God, I never thought if someone had showed it to me before it happened, I said, I could never live there. And you get settled in. Of course, I made them bring in my father bring in all my bookshelves, all my toys, all my things. So I set the room up like it was my own.
Yeah.
Which I don't think I was supposed to do that. But, you know, you just kind of learn to adapt your environment. And luckily, I started walking in the parallel bars with the long-legged braces.
Mm.
So I would do that pretty much all day. The rest of the day, I would just whip around in my
wheelchair.
And my best friends, he couldn't move from the neck down. So, you know, I'd push him around or I'd feed him at lunch. So, you know, I had sort of a buddy to take care of, which I think was good.
Yeah,
I met him when I came to visit Linda. He was a Marine, unfortunately, and was a quadriplegic. So,
wow.
But he was very witty, funny guy. Yeah. Love to talk.
Was it a combat injury?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, so, but he had great attitude. I mean, people say I had an attitude. He was going to go to college. He was going to keep on with his life. And I was total denial. I was going to walk. But anyway, became really good friends. So then I went back to Reebok. And Reebok was incredible. I remember they made the bathroom. We had a new building. And they couldn't bring me in to say, I got this in the shower where you could sit and you could this. And I'm like, I don't want to tell you this, but I'm never going to take a shower here. But anyway, it was really nice. the doors, and they were incredible. I mean, I've been there for a long time, so they're really good to me. But I also realized, you know, I was the only person in management in a wheelchair, and I think it kind of looked good for them that I'm whipping around. And, you know,
you're probably not wrong.
Kind of a good look. And I'm like, I'm going to suck it up. I'm going to go with this. But they were great. And I worked there then for another, 30 years? No. 20-some years.
Wow.
And
Reebok is based in, was in Stoughton, Connecticut, then moved to Brain Headquarters.
No, it was Stoughton, Mass. Always
Stoughton. I'm sorry, Stoughton, Mass, and then Canton, Mass. So they had big, but they were very good to Linda.
Very good. And the campus, I didn't have to leave. I had a dry cleaner. I had a restaurant. I had everything there. All my friends were there. I worked, you know, 12 hours a day. I loved it. I was very blessed to have a job that I love so much. And after my accident, my mom would come there in the summer and they would pick me up and take me down to my little cottage. And I'd sit out on the porch and just feel so lucky that I had that little cottage to go to and kind of decompress a little bit. So I was lucky in a lot of ways, you know, between my job and Reebok and my cottage and my family. You know, I was lucky.
Her loving brother.
I said, you're included there.
Yes. Well, yeah, no, you know, it sounds like, I mean, there are so many positives that you're taking from the situation, even though the situation in itself is awful, right? It's something that you had never probably ever thought of potentially even happening. And
I had thought about it. I saw someone, I said, that happens to me, I'll kill myself. And then it happens to you and you just have to, you know, go, are you going to kill yourself or are you going to get on with it?
Yeah.
So I get on with it a lot through denial. I have to say I was in denial. I was going to walk and I worked. And, you know, so I wasn't like some people who I really respect who just got on with it. They went to bars in the wheelchair. And so you kind of have to have different levels. But my situation physically matched my situation mentally with, like, say, all the things that were there to help me along the way. And of course, you know, I was miserable half the time, but you just have to get on with it.
Right.
You don't really have a choice. But everybody has their own way to get on with it. That's the one thing I have to say. Everyone has their own way to get on with it. So,
yeah, I think you're totally right. I mean, it's like any sort of mourning or, you know, situation. Everyone has to handle it in their own way. But as long as you can do so in a healthy and functional you know, fashion that is not, you know, eating away at somebody else or, you know, having any negative connotations with it. I think everybody needs to take their own path at their own speed. And that's just, you know, the basis of it. Steve, kind of going back to the day of that injury, can you remember where you were when it happened and how you found out and kind of how did that kind of play out in your world?
Yeah, so I just completed the 12 years of active duty in the Army. So I was embarking on my civilian career working with Division of Walmart. And I was in Longmont, Colorado, running a big warehouse and transportation operation. This is January of 94. And I get a call from my mom on a landline, which don't exist anymore because we didn't have cell phones back then. And she called and says, Steve, you need to get to Boston. I said, what's going on? She goes, Linda's had an accident. And that's all she said. I said, I'm thinking, what, like a car accident?
Yeah.
Something really? She goes, no. She went down a snow-covered hill. I go, what? How did she get hurt on a snow-covered hill? And that's when she said, she hit this bump and she we're not sure exactly what the extent of it is, but she's in the hospital right now. You need to get here quickly.
Yeah.
So I either that night or the next day I got there and I was just thinking the whole time. I mean, fear and uncertainty for her. I mean, this is my sister.
Yeah.
This is Linda. She's a triathlete. She was Reebok. We used to go together to Newport, Rhode Island. She was running big volleyball events. I'd see her running around like a crazy woman. And it's just unbelievable athlete and in shape. And it's like, she can't be hurt. That's not allowed.
Right.
And then I said, wait, this is Linda Carter, Wonder Woman. That's Wonder Woman. She can't be hurt.
Right.
And so, there was a lot of fear, uncertainty, doubt. And there was no way back then, there was no internet. There was no Google. I couldn't Google spinal cord injury or say, who do I call? I mean, there's no manual. You don't prepare for this. Just like Linda wasn't. She said she had seen people in this situation and said she was never going to deal with it like that. I had never thought about it. I mean, I had been in the military. I'd seen people get hurt. I'd been an athlete all my life, and I saw a guy break his neck in a rugby game, but he was able to walk afterwards.
Wow.
So anyway, it was a tough day for me, but nothing that was tough like my sister's dealing with. So,
Linda, I mean, when you look back on that, did you know pretty immediately that it was a significant, injury? And were you conscious through the whole thing? Was how long did it take until you kind of understood the severity of it?
The minute I hit the ground, because everyone started running around and I couldn't feel.
Oh.
And I remember getting the ambulance and saying, give me something to knock me out. I don't want to deal with this. Knock me out. And they couldn't. And, but then you just don't really, like I said, I didn't really know or think this was going to be that bad because I'm a snow tube. Okay. So hurt my back and it'll get better. And I do remember, I guess I had one surgery and I woke up and the doctor looked at me, said, well, I kind of have a good news and bad news. I don't know how to take it, but the bad news is you'll never do a triathlon again. The good news is you might walk, but you're going to need a lot of help, braces and all that stuff.
Right.
And I remember my mom and dad were there and, I think my mom added to my, was my denial friend. No, you're going to walk. And, but also it was a lot of it was, you just don't really know, you just kind of go along and thank God they had the morphine button at the hospital. That was something that I cherished. So you keep yourself kind of numb. And then when they sent me to rehab, I thought, okay, you're going to make me walk again. And it wasn't until I got in there that you started realizing you might not walk again. And I said, well, I'm going to walk in braces. So I worked on the brace work for a long time. Mm-hmm. I went back to Reebok. I went to rehab there. And that was sort of my workout. I'd walk in my braces and walk around. I'd go to Reebok. I'd walk around there a little bit and work out in their gym. One of the trainers there worked with me. So I was really lucky that way.
Nice.
And then it wasn't until I was walking quite well outside. And I was walking down like a patio and walking around.
You were walking in these leg braces.
Yeah, and the leg brace had one solid straight leg brace and another one where I could kick out and land, which took us a really long time.
So you had crutches?
A walker.
Okay.
And he said, you're doing so well. And I said, this sucks. This is as fast as I'm going to go and I can't carry anything and I'm going to fall down. Back to my fear of falling down.
Right.
And it was that point that I said, you know what? I'm going to do the wheelchair. I can get around. I'm going to deal with it. I'm glad I went that far to see as far as I could go.
Totally.
But it really was as far as I could go. So so it wasn't until like 10 years later that I really accepted the walker, and the walking was great, except it gave me terrible carpal tunnel. I had terrible arthritis. So, but, you know, it was worth doing just to see how far I could go. And it kept my mind occupied that I'm, you know, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
So I think as long as you're going to have something to occupy your mind a lot.
Yeah.
And I luckily had worked in my workouts and I pretty much ignored it.
Well, and having that drive, something that you're driving towards that, you know, gives you that outlook, that future outlook versus
that I can be normal.
Stuck in the present. So you mentioned earlier being somewhat of an introvert or, you know, being a very independent person and enjoying your independence. And I imagine, you know, an injury like this and the recovery that follows is something that is difficult to maintain a whole lot of independence or, you know, it makes being, you know, kind of, alone, it makes it difficult to spend time alone and you know, flex those introverted muscles, as it were. And, you know, did you find it particularly difficult after the injury that you just didn't get that alone time the way you wanted? Or were you still able to, you know, find a way through to get yourself, you know, some alone time?
I got my apartment right out of the VA, lived by myself. It was like going back to normal, going to work all the time, being in my house, my friends came over. I think now I've got some injuries, I have nurses coming in and that's, you know, really annoying. They're very nice, but you know, it's sort of like intruding in your world. But I didn't have a problem being alone.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you were lonely because I missed a lot of my other life, but I didn't think about it too much. There was no purpose in dwelling on that.
Right.
I will say that one way that Linda handled this amazingly is to go to work. She got a car, an Audi A4. She calls it her bug, June.
My ladybug.
Ladybug. And it's green. It's got a convertible. And she got it outfitted so that she could get in the car, slide over, reach around, pull the wheelchair behind her seat. They had a little ramp built. Then use electric seats and put the seat back, slide back over and drive with hand controls.
Awesome.
So kind of made her life more normal because then she could go to work.
Totally.
She could go down to the cottage. We built a ramp so she could drive right up to wheel herself up to the cottage and sit on the ramp. So that made it a little more, and she could have her alone time or be with people.
Yeah.
But I think though, just that kind of stuff, just not being deterred by, well, I can't go anywhere. I can't do anything.
Yeah.
Now she did it. She kept.
Well, I was pretty pushy. You know, I want this, I want this, and I want this. So, I mean, but if you don't speak up for yourself and say what you want, you know, it could be, you know, and I get very aggravated when people ask me, well, do you have someone to come take care of you in the morning? I'm like, what for? Well, to dress you. I'm like, I can dress myself.
Right.
I'm like, but people have this perception that, you know, you have to have a helper following you around all the time. And some people do. And I understand that. But, for me, I think how I got through of it, again, it was a lot of denial and a lot of focus and just luckily being in a job I loved and who was able to have it. Like I say, I had my family there, my little cottage. So,
yeah. You know. Did you ever have a hard time asking for help when you did need it?
Oh my God, that's the worst. That's the worst.
Yeah. See, I've always felt like that's a difficult thing, is to kind of come to terms with the fact that I, in my heart of hearts, believe I can do something. And when I realize that I need someone else, it's hard to, you know, muster up the strength to just say, well, I'm going to need help for this.
Yes, that is hard.
And so, I mean, like when you're looking back at the injury as a whole and, you know, your recovery and needing to ask for help, what kind of advice would you offer to someone who might be, you know, newly injured, who's struggling with that phase of their life where they're trying to fight for their independence and not wanting to necessarily ask for help, but realizing there are certain times that they need to. Do you have any kind of tips or tricks?
Surround yourself with the right people so that when you ask for help, you know it's not a burden.
Mm-hmm.
And you sometimes you just have to speak up. You just know you need the help. But I think I'm just so pushy and just
she gets her way and she sets it out and
I'm like,
but no, I do think she's at it. Sometimes she didn't ask for help. Unfortunately, one time I couldn't get a hold of her. We were living in Minnesota. We lived in Minnesota for 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved out to Massachusetts a couple of years ago to be closer to Linda, to be closer to our kids. And my wife's got some family. But anyway, one day we were in Minnesota. I could not get a hold of her. And we did have cell phones at this point. And I couldn't reach her. And I just started getting worried, obviously. What's happening? And I don't exactly remember how it happened. But finally, we got a hold of somebody who came in and got through, had the key to the room. Because she has a guy, a maintenance guy, and a nurse, and a cleaning lady come in, and someone came in and found her, and she was on the ground, fell out of her chair, and her independent said, I'll get back up in my chair. Well, she couldn't. And all she had next to her was a bottle of tonic water. And tonic water is not hydrating. It's dehydrating because it got salt in it. And that's all she was drinking. So she was severely dehydrated. Luckily, they called the paramedics. Firemen come. She likes the firemen because they're always good looking. Hunk of man.
Yes.
Sometimes she calls them when she doesn't even need them. But
oh no, I've fallen out of my chair again.
I can't get up.
Oh yes. Anyway, so that was one of those times where I kind of yelled at her, Linda. You can't be totally independent.
Right.
So we got all the phone numbers of all the people around this apartment complex or this condo where she lives, and now we have a kind of a plan. That she, if she falls, she can't just sit there and hope that her cats drag her up to her chair.
Well, I think Adelso comes in almost every day. He's the building manager. So, well, Adelso will come in, and I felt kind of in between. Actually, I was on the couch, and then I fell out of the chair, and I thought I'll climb myself up on the couch, and I couldn't get there. So it's kind of wedged between the coffee table and the couch, and Adelso did come in and didn't see me. And then the paramedics came in. And then I realized, you know, I have to make sure that my friends and family, although they did it by my back, my best friend, Chris St. Pierre, and my brother, Steve. So they get the phone numbers and they go back and forth and Chris knows everybody. And seems. So I realized I have to do that to my family. You know, I think I'm fine, you know, but also I was thankful because, you know, I have gotten dehydrated and, you know, get all sorts of messy things.
Well, yeah.
So sometimes that's the kind of help you do need that you don't really realize, but I was really glad that people were looking out for me. And that's one of the things, maybe I'm independent because I know people are looking out for me. I know my brother's always looking out for me. I know my parents were always looking out. So sometimes, but I had to realize, you know, this is an added sort of thing for them to have to worry about, you know, that I could be laying on the ground for a day with my dog.
Right. Well, and you know, that's a little, it's a scary situation to wind up in. And, you know, it's also probably something you had never thought this is not going to happen. And
right.
Like, how is this the thing that causes any sort of fear for anybody? And I totally get that. Are there any things that you feel like you can't do? Or are you pretty steadfast in the way you're living now that you're confident that pretty much everything you want to be doing, you're able to accomplish? Or are there still things that are kind of just out of reach?
Well, I think I've structured my life around what I can do.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of, you build your world. So you're not in an environment where you're looking at people doing things all the time and, you know, you're frustrated. So no, right now it's like, as long as I live in my little world, you know, the minute something comes up and you have to break away. But, you know, considering that, you know, went to France, went all over the place, people pick you up, they get to places. Ignorance is bliss in traveling the first time in a wheelchair. I'm glad I didn't really know what I was getting into.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, now I feel very, you know, comfortable in my little world. The wheelchair has brought my world smaller and you just have to accept that. But the people in my world are just incredible.
Yeah.
And I like what I'm doing. And I'm lucky that I like being alone. You know, I'm glad I'm not like a, you know, somebody flits around all the time, needs to be in the bars. because that would be really, that would be really frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and then Steve, you know, kind of looking at the current state of things as both of you are growing older and, you know, you had mentioned she's had some health difficulties that are in, you know, in accordance with this injury. Is there parts of that that I'm assuming have been tricky in lending support and not being too, I don't know, like almost like overhead, right? You want to maintain her independence and give her as much flexibility as you can, but at the same time, you're loving and caring. And, you know, how have you navigated the current situation?
Well, it's pretty easy with my sister because she'll just tell me, shut up or get out. But but she is
really, I don't think I could see Linda saying something like that.
She's very independent, but no, really, you got to find that balance because I do just want to treat her like Linda. She's my sister. I don't care if she's standing or sitting. Mm-hmm. She's still a sister I love and a helper. But we do have to face reality of some things. And I'd love, like, it's hard for her to get in that car now because of the shoulders and the
that'll get better
carpal tunnel. And so until that's better, I'll come up and pick it. I'll say, Linda, I'll come pick you up. And we'll go down to the cottage.
Yeah.
And you can sit. But so that's a little different than I probably wouldn't do if she wasn't in this situation now.
But you do stuff. You do. You know, I know he's around. He'll come up a lot. And when I go to his house, he's got a little ramp for me so we can get up and down. And they move the whole furniture around. They redesign the whole house. So, you know, that's the kind of family that you need to have. And they just do it. You know, and my niece and nephew around, they've only known me in a wheelchair. So there's no uncomfortable thing that way.
We are facing trying to figure what is. I mean, Linda's blessed to have these nurses come into the place and she can be independent. And if anything changes, then can I convince her to move closer to the Cape? She likes Cape Cod, but she loves, as she said, this condo she's in. It's beautiful. She's got her art all around it. She's just a very creative person. It's right out of a magazine. If someone looked at design magazine, so for her to move would be tough. But if that comes up, we'll have to face it and say, you know, well, could we get you an independent living, an apartment or something down on the Cape, closer to us?
Yeah.
And then that's as far as we're thinking right now.
Right.
And we're not going to get any other issue.
And I think, you know, I think that's good though. I think, you know, to that point, you know, I think as a family member of someone or being that support person, it sounds like a lot of your time is best spent on preemptive thought. So you're just trying to think a step ahead so that when certain things happen or certain situations come about that you're prepared and able to actually give assistance, you know, rearranging your house. If she comes and visits, then she can actually enjoy herself and get around the place. It's not so difficult for her to move, but you know, it doesn't require her to ask you to do that. You're just thinking ahead of how you'd, you know, want to be treated if you were in that situation or how you'd like the world to look if you were in her situation. And I think that's huge. Are there any other kind of...
He was very proud in his new house. He had a shower that I could get into and a bathroom I could get into because his last house was tiny. And now he's like, he's got all these bathrooms and this was my bathroom. And it was like so sweet the way he showed me that this is going to be my bathroom. And I'm probably, you know, every time I go, I usually stay at a little hotel down the way because I don't want to impose. You know what I mean? There's sort of that...
Totally.
Limit. You don't want to put too much on your family. But yeah, I mean, it's just, I guess it became sort of a natural thing. And I knew there were times when he was uncomfortable and didn't know what to do. And we kind of worked through it. But you know, I've just always said, treat me as normal as you can. Cause obviously there's issues and there are times when I need special help.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but done a lot of stuff done with humor, you know, trying to get me cars and, you know, it's just, I think I was just very lucky that everything around me could have been a lot worse and it made things so much better.
Totally.
You know, I'm just very blessed.
Well, and Steve, are there any other kind of pieces of advice that you would lend to someone who might be, you know, supporting someone with paralysis? And how they can do, you know, maybe even if it's not be better as a support person, because that's a really complicated and you know, heavy question, but more so like how can they potentially think about it differently in a way that might help them?
I would say that what Linda coined really well is surround yourself with the right people. She's got this group of friends that Shane and
Jill Chris.
And Chris and these ladies are just so awesome because they just treat her as one of the gang that she, and so that,
yeah.
And I surprised her one time when I came out to, when I was living in Minnesota and for her birthday, and they were all having a party drinking, and I just showed up at the back door and
that was Christmas.
What's going on? What's going on? But I had arranged it with all her friends,
right?
Because we didn't learn. So I think that, and it's really hard to say, just treat the folks who are injured normally, because mm-hmm. you know it's not. But they are real; they're human beings. And just like Linda said, she hates going into a room. People stare at her and say, just so. I guess the thing I would say is just treat them like they're, and especially it's easy with Linda because she's so full of life. Mm-hmm. She's so funny.
Right.
She's so passionate and energetic.
She hasn't
changed.
She was down,
no, nothing changed. And again, she's so unselfish, and she lives her life more as a Christian than I probably ever could, because she's unselfish and cares about others and animals more than I do. And it's just
animals.
She's got elephants and stuff that she adopts in Africa, and I don't know about that.
That's awesome.
Anyway, but anyway, so I would say, to answer your question, there's no real tip other than relative of someone who's injured, just treat them like, don't have pity on them. Mm-hmm. You can have empathy. You can try to help them, but just treat them like normal. Still have the joke. Still make like a little fun. Again, you have to judge with the person you're talking to.
Right.
If someone's very serious and someone's down and depressed, you can't make jokes about it because that won't work.
Yeah.
That's where the emotional intelligence kicks in. But with people like Linda and who have this kind of attitude of not going to let it get me down, then go with it. If they are going to let them get it down, then try to, you know,
let them get down. There's some
respond
days,
to them.
Yeah. Some days it just suck and I'm just don't want to go anywhere. It sucks. Mm-hmm. You know, some days you need to cry and you just go through that too. I'm not, you know, all jolly wally over here, but, you know, it is so much predicated on the person. I have another friend who's in a wheelchair and he too is very independent and they treat him just, you know, like they would, mm-hmm. you know, he works at the restaurant, he's at the restaurant. But then there were people in the hospital. I knew that they were all kind of, oh, woe is me. And they liked being babied. That's one guy. He liked being babied and pushed around. Oh, so, you know, it's really based on, you know, the person's personality. Nothing fits, you know, one size fits all.
Right.
And it may be this while to figure out what works for us, but we just were plugging along and just trying to make it all work. And
I will say that worked. being an advocate for people in paralysis or wheelchairs.
Yeah.
I never knew that a curb that big was like a 100-mile wall to people in wheelchair. She told me about in France, you can't get around. France doesn't have ADA. And
right.
So it's just that little wall is a huge wall. And talking to people about that and educating them and saying, here's some things to think about. And and being an advocate for this Morton Cure paralysis. And you can, you know, let's help people. Don't just sit there and woe is me. And the other thing is try to keep it in perspective. So if I have a bad back or my leg is numb and I say, oh boy, I'm feeling sorry for myself. I look at this lady and I say, come on.
And that's what I hate.
Suck it up.
I hate it when people won't talk to me about their injuries. Oh, but look at you. I'm like, yeah, but your injury is your injury. And what, are we only going to talk about me? I want to hear you're falling apart too. It makes me feel really good that something's going wrong with you too.
I'm working on that for you. So anyway, I think as far as a tip is tell people, you know, to live their life, but also advocate, help them out.
Yeah.
Say,
what do you need?
What do you need?
Friends say, what do you want me to do? You know, and one friend, he took me skiing because he goes, you need to go on a trip. We're going to go to Greece. That was crazy thought. So I said,
I was just in Greece. I can't imagine getting around Greece in a wheelchair.
Like something happened. We couldn't go. So I said, you know what? I'm going to go back to the mountain. So we went skiing at Park City and we're flying in. And of course, he's got his headsets and on. He's rock and roll. And I went into a pure panic attack. I couldn't breathe. And I'm in the flight attendant's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, oh my God. And he didn't even know. And so we get there and I said, is this going to make you uncomfortable? And I said, I'm only as uncomfortable as you are. And that's always stuck in my head that the minute if I'm really uncomfortable, he feels uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so it's a good gauge, kind of like, and, I went the downhill skiing, which totally sucked. I hated it until the end when the trainers took me up to the very top and it was like between his legs. And we just pushed all the way down, just like a downhill racer would be. And oh my God, it was the best feeling ever. that was great. But my friends were just kind of like, I keep saying I'm just blessed for the people I had around me. God might have put me in a wheelchair, but he gave me really good people to surround myself with. And the ones that made me uncomfortable, well, they're not around anymore. I was
right.
Harsh in some ways, but I'm like, I can't deal with you being uncomfortable.
Yeah, you surrounded yourself with people who want to ride with you, not, you know, ride next to you. They're with you on the ride. They want to be part of it. So I think that's awesome. I guess
because they have to be part of it. He has to be part of it. It's no choice.
Well, he is your brother after all. So
yes, yes, my good brother.
I think the last kind of question is less of a question, more of a statement. Is what's the future look like for the two of you? What's the future for Steve and Linda Carter look like?
Well, I'll go first because this is your show. So I'll just say, helping wherever needed, but just trying to, we'll take it one day at a time, mm-hmm. and not look too far, face reality when we need to. But I hope that we get Linda down to the Cape more often so we can, it's an hour and a half ride from where she is here in near Boston. Help her enjoy the things she likes to enjoy and do the things I like to do. And she likes to be part of that. She loves my kids and, you know, be part of the family. So I don't think it's any different future than anybody else in a able or disabled state.
Yeah.
I will say in the long-term future for anybody watching this, that if you go to heaven after me, the bad news is you're going to have a long wait because I'm going to be talking to God for a long time saying, why did this happen to her? And I got mm-hmm. lots of questions. And so that's why eternity is forever. You're going to have a long wait. Sorry about that.
Well, you know, things happen, and I guess one reason I'm really not too worried about the future is because everything seems to have been falling in place. Even my brother moving out here, it was like, oh my gosh, my brother moves out here, and then his son gets a job in Boston, and so it's sort of like things have worked out. So in my worst fears, when I don't know what's going to happen, I always just kind of remember things have worked out. Mm-hmm. And they worked out because of people around me making it work, because of myself making it work. But a little bit of somehow it's just
the powers that be.
And acceptance. Yeah. You got to accept, you get to a point where like, okay, you got to accept. And then you got to, but you also have to fight. I'm going to fight going to a nursing home till the day I die. But maybe something else will come out. So we'll see. But yeah, that's kind of a, that's the conversation you have with your mom and dad when they get old, not your sister.
I hear you on that. I definitely hear you on that. Well, that sounds fantastic. I wanted, again, from the bottom of my heart and everyone from MCPF, thank you both for joining us on today's podcast. I do want to take a moment and just shout out everybody who might be watching this on YouTube or listening on their favorite podcast platform. We urge you to give us a subscription or a follow. It helps us immensely. And we want to continue to get the word out about the amazing people in this world like Linda and Steve here, and more about MCPF and the hard work that we're doing to, work towards a cure for paralysis. So
Can I say one more?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just thinking about at Reebok, how it, I didn't want to stand out, but I also thought it was really important for people to see you can go to work in a wheelchair. You can drive yourself. You can lift yourself. You can have a job. You can get a promotion. You can do all those things, you know, within the realms, you know, and you get someone like Reebok that helps me. I get the perfect place to sit, whatever. But sometimes, you know, you just have to kind of, I lost my train of thought. What was I saying?
Model it. You have to be willing to show that it can be done.
Yeah. Yeah. I did want to show people that, you know, I'd walk into a meeting and I'd wheel up to the front of the table and I'd go, oh, I'd be like, yeah, yeah. You know, so that in that way, it was good to be at Reebok to show people coming in that you can get on with your life.
Yeah.
And I probably looked out on a lot of people and said, I don't need someone to dress me. I can do this myself. But in a more eloquent way, just by showing up and you're doing your job, and it showed people that you can have a job after an accident.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're a walking or rolling, living testament to the fact that humans are remarkable creatures who can adapt in so many different ways, and having the mental capacity to be strong and tough and drive towards what is impassioning you is all that matters most. And so I think you embody that wholeheartedly. And again, really just appreciate the two of you joining us on today's podcast.
Well, thanks for doing this, David. Appreciate you navigating it. And as I like what you said, as a board member of this group, please subscribe and like it and help support it.
Please, that's my guy.
Please send some money for the four wheel chill girl, okay? Use what God gave you. Let me tell you, I've gotten a lot of places for the wheelchair. Sorry.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, you guys.
Bye. Thanks. Thank you.
Bye.